for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And I'm Paul James.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast with over 50 years of playing PlayStation, like 15 years in that games media combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X. Those links can be found in the description below, and I believe TikTok now too.
Yeah, TikTok now too. But if you want to join us as the conversation happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, or comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist. But Max, you're absolutely correct. We have ventured into the world of TikTok over the last week with the lovely reveal for my partner Phoebe's birthday. I did pick her up the Ghost of Yotai controller with the assist from yourself, Max, who I then learnt did the also assist for Phoebe in helping me acquire the Death Stranding controller, which we did touch upon last week. However, since then, posted on the socials, some gangbusters. It's like, you know, 5,000 views on the YouTubes. TikTok's a bit low, but that's because TikTok, you know, is like, hey, this is your first posting. Fuck you, I guess. But Instagram's done well. It's been a good little moment. Now, while you guys, like, I'm going to ask you guys how you're all doing, and we'll do our how you're doing chat, but I've also got, speaking of controls, I got this bad bitch to open, so I'm going to open it right here on camera while we're here.
I haven't gone to pick mine up yet.
Oh, so. No. Anyway, as you shake your head in kind of protest, I guess, Max, how you been?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. A bit sore today. I went paintballing yesterday. Took a couple of gnarly shots, but, you know, should be right.
That's not how you explained it to me. I got this lovely voice message from Max being like, yeah, I decided to cheap out and not do this thing, and then that almost blew back in my face.
Okay, so basically I got there and they're like, hey, would you like to spend extra money for extra protection? I'm like, nah.
You're like, mate, I could barely afford to be here now.
I'm like, I'll just raw dog it. What's the worst that can happen?
You say yes, they're just going to give you a cricket box anyway, and that's it.
Like, yeah, well, I wasn't wearing appropriate underwear for a box to stay in place, so like that wasn't going to be helpful anyway. So I'm like, ah, fuck it, I'll be fine.
You understand that's asking, that creates a lot more questions.
I'm like, what's the worst that could happen? Yeah, exactly. Like, what's the worst that could happen?
Oh, that's a good point. I'm like, I wear boxes, but then again, that makes sense, I think.
Neck minute, I took like...
That bad boy's just going to fall out the side.
Yeah, exactly. I took 3 quick succession shots into the inner thigh that like grazed the testicle at one point. I'm like, oh shit, maybe I should have spent that $5. And I opted to not buy gloves. I got shot in the fucking hand.
Mm. Not having kids ever again, but $5 is $5.
That's true.
Yeah, well.
All right. Well, there we have it. It's the box is now empty. Lovely box. Pretty. Max, how you been? I mean, not Max, Patch, how you been?
Yeah, going all right. Busy week. It's been, I mean, I'm now halfway through the busiest fortnight that I have for the entire year with work. So, fair bit of survival there. I've had to, this Friday, lead a whole, nearly 200 year 10s to put together an entire marketplace for the entire school. Just this past Friday. They did an amazing job. Holy shit, there was some good food. Might have a few budding chefs.
Oh, did you make like a school fete?
Yeah, it was an entire market day for the rest of the school that my year 10s organized and led and ran. So,
I have weird memories of like my primary school when I was growing up.
No, I wouldn't. I have never
seen one since. Like a completely school organized, like almost night market or a day market, right? There were stalls, there was blow up thing, there was a bunch of stuff. Was it similar to that?
A similar-ish, like a lot of food stalls, but you had some kids I blocked out a classroom for so they could set up a photo booth.
Oh, that's cool.
You had other kids bringing in their Nintendo Switches, and they had like Mario Kart racing contest going on in there.
Mm.
Historically, we've had like throw the ice bucket at the teacher sort of challenges. Last year, I was a prime target for that because I'm an obnoxious arsehole to them most of the time. And I had the flu for 2 weeks off the back of it. No such event this year. Maybe they figured as organizer, I had no chance of actually.
Well, yeah, you're the one helping make this happen. So why bother? Yeah. Without your kindness, it wouldn't have been done.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, there's that. My year 12s do their exams this coming Friday.
Oh my God, yeah, it's right on exam time.
So this is my grand final kind of period at this point. Ironically, that I joined you guys right after dealing with a grand final.
Yeah.
That didn't actually happen. We don't talk about it.
No. But what did happen, though, I did purchase this controller. This is the God of War DualSense. Padge, is there a reason you haven't picked yours up yet?
Lazy shit. No, all the reasons that I just discussed. I just haven't a chance to
excuse me
to make the 15-minute trip up the freeway to pick it up.
Because the store that I picked this up is now the JB Hi-Fi I work at. Woo! And I'll be there, and I'll be working this week when I pick up the other one. So, big reveal, big bang, boom, there it is. It's exactly as plain as you expected, Max. Yeah, it's pretty bang on.
Can you pick mine up? save me a trip.
All right, well, there you go. It is exactly as plain as we anticipated. I do like the vibrancy of the red. I'm similar with you, Max. I wish if it was more... Oh, hang on. There is a bit more of a dusty sort of white on the middle section. So it does... It's an off-white. It's not a super clear white. But the red face buttons are a nice touch, as are the triggers. Is it awesome? Me personally, yes. Objectively, not really. Still glad I bought it, though.
Keen to pick mine up.
Outside of that, I've also been well... back in the work life, which is lovely. I'm now two job Betson. I have one job as a support worker and one now job working at JB Hi-Fi. So big thank you to our friend Buddy, who helped me out with some tips and tricks on how to navigate their recruitment process, which gave me a little bit of a way in, which was lovely. But outside of that...
Was it simple? Like, just promise them that you won't steal the product and you're fine?
Well, mostly. But it was also more of like, if you answer them this way, it aligns with JB's things. And they'll be like, ooh. And that's what I did. And it worked, apparently. So
values.
Yes, I got my first, like, proper shift tomorrow, where I've done my induction and whatnot now. But look, this is going to be, although it's not going to be a very long show this week... there are some things that will most definitely add some time to it. So let's get into it now. Let's call this, this section where we talk about what we've been playing this week. Now that's a nice cue for the person at the end of the house to wander on down. We discussed this last week. So as of this moment in time, I've put about 7 hours into Ghost of Yotai. My son has put the better part of 18 hours into the game.
Fuck, you're useless. Seriously.
I know, right?
You're so fucking shit. And even this time he's going, yeah, and I like the game, and he's still not playing.
No. On top of that, then my partner, Phoebe, is the better part of 40 hours into the game at this point. Now, your immediate assumption is, Ryan, you suck, and that is accurate. However, it's because I have chosen to spend for them to spend the time with the game instead. Mostly because like we both can't play it at the same time. I only have one PlayStation in the house. However, I thought I'd go something a little bit different with this. So Max, you finished it. You gave us your thoughts last week. Padge, because you had them sweet early access, you reviewed it for player2.net.au. Go check it out.
I did.
And they talked about that about 2-3 weeks ago. I'm only 7 hours deep, so I'm going to step out of the chair. And instead, my partner Phoebe is going to jump in and do the review. Now, she has come in way more prepared than I think I have for fucking any podcast I've ever done. it came down to the conversation of like, how do I do this? I'm like, well, break it down into its parts, right? And build on that. And that's how you kind of build your opinion and you see where you go. So what started as a series of dot points on a notepad.
This comes from Betson, the Metacritic accredited reviewer.
I know, isn't that insane? As I said to her today, I was like, I've got two Metacritic reviews. I've not done any of this shit. So then that became a mind map. You know, like the bubble things, the bubble with the lines and more bubbles as she's fleshed out her thoughts.
Mind map, yeah.
Mind map, thank you. Which has then come into literally a written review in progress. So part of what she'll be delivering to you is what she has written verbatim. And then after each little section, feel free to discuss, because I also like to see what you guys have to say in conjunction with her. It should be really fun. So
sounds like a plan.
It does sound like a plan. And it's a very long, illustrious welcome.
How much of the game do you remember, Padge?
It's been a few weeks and a lot of beers.
And that's the fun part. It's been a few weeks for both of you. I mean, you get nicely refreshed on the game. So I'm going to step out of the way and I'm going to welcome in my lovely partner, Phoebe. For not just her first ever podcast appearance, but her first ever review of her first ever game that she's played pretty much entirely by herself. I'll see you guys on the other side. Have fun.
What a cop out.
He's the fucking worst. He is the worst.
Phoebe's going to absolutely crush it.
Maybe it's a good thing he was gone to fucking for the wrestling, so he didn't have to. So Rob didn't have to talk to him.
It's a good point, because he's a fucking fraud. Phoebe, on the other hand, is not.
Hi guys,
Max. You better lead the ship here. You are the other pop culturist. Now we.
I need to lead the ship. I have almost no memory of this game. I've completely forgotten almost everything I've played in the last 2 weeks. So
this bamboo, is foxes and wolves.
Foxes, oh, yeah, wolves.
Also kill a few people.
Yeah, pretty much.
The other thing is Phoebe also hasn't finished, so we need to be spoiler adjacent.
Yeah. Yes, please. I've tried to keep this as spoiler free as well. But yeah. Anyway. Do you want me to just jump into it?
Just dive straight into it, and we'll just, yeah. If you get stuck, we'll help you out.
So, finding my inner samurai. While Ryan was off gallivanting around Perth, I decided it was time to try something new. Ghosts of Yotei. Now, for context, this is the first game I've ever played entirely on my own. And fittingly, my first ever game review. Ryan has been trying to get me into gaming for years. I've dipped my toes in here and there. Baldur's Gate was fun until the online chaos of playing with others irritated me to no end. Split Fiction was just way too fast-paced for my skill level and likely made Ryan want to throw his controller. Which one? But something changed after watching Ryan play Death Stranding 2. I realised games don't have to be all stress and speed. You can go at your own pace, explore, make choices, and just exist in the world. So when Ryan booted up this new samurai adventure, I was intrigued. A stunning world, a strong female lead, sword fights. Okay, I could get into this. I was hesitant though. The last time I touched one of Ryan's games, let's not talk about the blueprints incident, things didn't exactly end well. But Ghost of Yotei called to me, and while he's away, I took the plunge. I've not completed the story yet, though I'm 40 plus hours in. But I've tried to keep myself as spoiler-free as possible for Ryan. I've only really played when he's out of the room. He's only come in, gone a bit, or I've got up early and played this morning before he even got out of bed. So he doesn't know too much about the story, so I'm not touching story points. Nice.
You may eventually have to tell him what the story is, because he is never playing this game.
Let's be real, he's never going to finish. No, it's not because of you.
It's just
a very convenient excuse this time. But he would have gone down this road and failed us anyway, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, he would have got bored and lost in no time. All right, so part one. That was just my intro. A story of vengeance, forgiveness, and finding peace. The story of Ghost of Yotei unfolds like a beautifully written novel, or maybe more accurately, a book of short stories woven into one powerful journey. You play as Atsu, a hardened mercenary haunted by the brutal murder of her family 16 years ago. She's a woman of no people, closed off from the world, and driven only by vengeance. But as her journey progresses, Atsu begins to meet others who have also suffered loss. Through these connections, she slowly learns to open up, to forgive, and to believe in that peace and maybe even happiness might still be possible. Atsu is one of the most compelling leads I've encountered, but she's far from alone. The supporting cast doesn't just orbit her story, they shape it. Characters like Jubei and Oyuki, for instance, challenge Atsu's beliefs and help her rediscover trust. Every companion feels purposeful, every encounter meaningful. I found myself genuinely caring for the people I meet, not just as supporting cast, but as part of Atsu's healing. Their development mirrors her own, creating a surprisingly emotional journey for a game and for me, the player. So yeah, that was my breakdown of the story without talking about the story.
Which,
very well done.
Which way did you tackle it? Because you mentioned Jubei and Aoki, which happened in two of the rather early story beats. Which way did you tackle that? Which character did you meet first?
I did the Kitsune one first.
Nice.
Which was pretty epic in itself. Like, that just felt like it went for ages. And because, unlike you, I looked and did everything in that whole area.
Kind of. A little drive-by there I stepped away from the story quite a bit
and came back to it. So it felt like a very long, epic journey for me, that whole area.
It's right. I thought I had finished the Kitsune story and went and did the Oni, and then went, oh, I haven't finished this, and went back and...
Yeah, goes on for a bit. But it was really good. I really enjoyed that. That was awesome. But then...
There you go. So she wasn't talking to the mic properly.
It was fine.
Always it was perfectly fine. Ryan ruining everything.
He's just always the critic. He's got perfection. But yeah.
It was fun. How are you finding playing a game that requires a fair bit of coordination, the use of two thumbsticks at the same time, as well as separate button inputs?
Not too bad. And thank you for that lead-in, because that's exactly what my next part is about.
Oh. Mind reader.
The $50 under the table later on.
Part two, combat and mechanics, learning the way of the blade. I'll be honest. I played on casual mode, and I regret nothing. As someone completely
No, I didn't. Get fucked.
As someone completely new to this genre and gaming in general, it was the perfect way to focus on the story without constantly dying and rage quitting. The game teaches you as you go, gently reminding you of controls and combos without being too intrusive. Each new weapon comes with training that actually makes sense. I never felt overwhelmed. And the more Atsu learned, the more confident I became. With each bamboo strike, I felt a small victory. At first, I charged into fights like a chaos demon, hacking away at anything that moved. But as I got better, I started experimenting with the stealth, ranged attacks, and timing. Before long, combat felt fluid and natural. I wasn't just surviving battles, I was mastering them. Building my skills tree, upgrading my gear, finding very helpful charms. But for all its complexities, the game felt very instinctive and genuinely a joy to play. So yeah, no, I did. I think that's why I sort of focused on a lot of the side quest stuff first, was just to get used to the controls.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but I was like, there's no way I could go after these big bosses now. I don't know what I'm doing. So I did sort of go down that path because of that, I think. But because, like, each weapon is kind of introduced individually, and then you sort of learn how to switch between them, which felt really easy to do as well. Like, as soon as you saw what weapon they had, I knew what to switch to, kind of thing. But, it was quite good. Yeah. I actually didn't – like, I felt challenged, but without it being frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about that combat, especially, and you obviously referencing playing it on casual there, and once I finished the campaign, like, all right, now I'm just going to go and, you know, slice and dice my way through people and drop that shit to casual and just start, like...
It's pretty satisfying.
There's the nuance there if you want to still kind of play, I guess, within the rule set that the game's set up, but also you can just mash your way through it, and it's, as you said, it's really, really satisfying to just go all Dynasty Warriors on these guys.
Yeah. Have you done it the other way, Paul? Have you popped it up to hard mode? Because it is ridiculous.
No, because I'm not some sort of psychopath. Normal. Normal is how these games have been designed. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make a Souls-like out of everything. You can enjoy that shit yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't enjoy it. It was terrible.
I did flick to easy for a little bit. But it just like the battle area combat just felt like it dragged on for me then. Like, so I like it was kind of funner to play it on casual for me.
How did you kind of tackle your encounters with enemies? Did you kind of try and use more stealth mechanics, or did you find yourself kind of just going in and being like, I can do this, and kind of just go crazy?
Yeah, definitely at first I would just like just run in and just slash people and press buttons.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, and as I sort of figured out the weapons better and when to use certain weapons, I definitely like slowed down and would like go around the base first and like check out which might be the best way to go in, or and then find the long grass and get in there and assassinate people and stuff. That was quite fun. Once I got, I actually quite started to enjoy the stealth. At first, I just kept getting busted and like just, you know, hitting the wrong button or something, and just then getting slashed. And so no, the wolf fighting stuff was really fun too. Like being able to have my little wolf buddy there fighting with me was fun.
Yeah.
Yep. most of my, I'm pretty sure I've got all of the weapons now. They're all upgraded. So like even though I'm 40 machine plus and not like, I've pretty much found 90% of the shrines. I think I've done all the bamboo strikes. So
nice.
Yeah, like I'm
my which skill, my which skill tree which
is pretty full.
Which of your weapons do you favor most? Because despite the fact that it obviously has that rock paper scissors style of like you should use this against that, I often found myself going like, I don't care. I want to have fun with this, and I'll just brute force it if I have to.
Yeah. I quite liked the big bow, especially after I upgraded it, and I just
how could good
shoot
is it?
Like three people at once and not hit and just get headshots. You do. Just that was fun. But, you know, that's only if you're from a distance and from a vantage point. Kind of thing. But, yeah, no, I think even just, like, your original blade kind of worked. Whenever a big brute comes along, got my big, massive one out.
Adachi, yeah. That's pretty good feeling, that one, because you can still wreck shop with that one.
Yeah, that was fun.
So different. I just popped a smoke grenade and would just assassinate everyone.
Yeah.
Just move on to the next. They just moved to the next group. Just like smoke bomb and then assassinate everyone.
Did you find the other throwable explosives? Have you done that yet?
No, not yet. There's a few that I'm missing. So I'm missing
grenades now, man. Like I can just go.
I'm missing those, and I'm missing the kunai.
I've got them as well.
So they're the only two ranged weapons. The only two weapons that I'm missing are those. I've got everything else. Yeah.
So that's not on the golden path. You have to actually do other things.
Yeah, I mean, most of it was because I didn't find my bow until about 20 hours in, because I didn't realize I just had to speak to someone to get one.
Yeah, you just go buy it.
So I'm like, I could really use a bow right now. Mm. Maybe I should go find one.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think I finished it in just over 30-ish hours. Like, I definitely didn't golden path this game. I probably could have finished it a lot faster.
Yeah.
But every time that canary popped up on my screen, I had to follow it.
Same. Every time my little fly fox ran out, after him. It was fun. Yeah.
I'm very eager to go back and just embrace that more. Like, I definitely didn't golden path it, but I'm keen to now just go and find all the secrets that are still contained within this game. I've gone and completed one, and I'll not spoil anything for you or anyone else potentially watching, that kind of links back to the... There's a little hearkening to the previous game. There's one of the side quests there.
I've done that one.
And that is the way that whole thing plays out is top shelf. But that's because I kind of knew to go looking for it. I think the trophies had nudged me towards there being something, so I was hunting for it. But I want to just go out there and still discover. I think there's some elements of some of the primary side quests that I still got to do. Plenty of bounties.
Mm-mm.
It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right. Part three. Game. This is like one paragraph. Relax. Gameplay and mission structure. Each of the major chapters feels like a new yet connected world, introducing new environments and steadily raising the stakes. The mission structure can get a little bit repetitive. It's lead, investigate, chase, fight, repeat. But it's carried by strong narrative momentum and a growing emotional payoff. The exploration, the characters' interactions, the rising tension made each act feel meaningful, even when the objectives started to blur together. So, yeah, they all start to feel a little bit the same, but you get something a little bit out of each of them as well.
Yep. It's one of those things. There's only so many types of missions that you can put into a game before they're all samey. Thankfully, there's no escort quests, at least that I've run across, where you have to essentially like take someone from point A to point B, but if they die on the way, then it's just game over.
No, I have had one of those.
There's one of those? Oh, wonderful.
Briefly.
But okay, like when there's a very small number, like one, for example, yeah. That's yeah. fine. It's when, yeah. when games kind of overdo it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You start to find the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
How have you, because you've been to, if you've done, you've have you only done the Oni and the Kitsune?
No, I'm down chasing, well, I've sort
the
of.
The brothers?
Yeah.
I've got. So you've opened up all the areas now?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't want to give too much story away, but essentially one of them is in captivity.
And that's yeah.
kind of where I'm at. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one because you can kind of see that Jubei and Oyuki are kind of seeing like a little bit of regression in her personal development from that scene. So I'm interested to sort of see where it goes from there, because it's kind of like
I wonder if you would have the same point of view had you have done that before the other two.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, maybe that's the point.
Being an open world game and you can kind of tackle it however you want, it's a fascinating way, because I think all three of us did the Kitsune story first.
Oh, no, I was the
only. No, you did Oni first? Okay. I don't know anyone who went and did the brothers first, and I think it'll be would be a really interesting take on.
You can't. I'm just double checking because you can't. There's actually only
you
two.
Can't.
You can only deal with either the only.
Because I had three at the start of the game. I vaguely remember three of the main story quests that you could tackle at once, and it was going to Saito's encampment, which kind of kicked off that whole portion of it. You could go to the Kitsune, or you could go to the Oni. But can you not progress past that one?
The real key around the Saito one, though, is that the region around it had to be kind of cleared, which then prompted you to finish the other stories first. So you can kind of start it, but you can't really finish it. You've got to go do the Oni. It's not quite as open as they want to make you think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's still fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All right, part four. Exploration is my kind of adventure. Exploration is where Ghost of Yotai completely won me over. Unlike you, Golden Path Max, and Padge apparently, I chased every fox, bird, and flyfly I could. I hunted down shrines, hot springs, bamboo strikes, you name it. Every side quest felt meaningful, steeped in lore and empathy. The people you help aren't just filler characters, they add depth to Atsu's journey and reinforce the game's core theme, that she is no longer a lone wolf but part of a pack. I loved the sense of discovery. It was magical. Every new vista begged to be explored. Every encounter left me more connected to the world and its people.
Look, I feel like I need to defend myself here just a little bit. I was on a pretty tight time frame for this. And not all of us had the luxury of Paul playing it early.
A month beforehand.
I had, 7 days to get it done before an interview. Mm-hmm. So
I feel bad for you. I hope you go back and finish all the little bits.
Yeah, I will. I plan to go back and get the platinum for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just shy of halfway there already. So.
Yeah, I did find it really frustrating watching James play. Because he would just not listen to anything. He would just go straight after
kids,
this,
right?
And he'd fast travel everywhere. And I'm like, it's the journey. It's like, you need to listen.
So I didn't use the fast travel until like the very end of the game, because I was enjoying like the moment to moment between point A and point B. And then I'm like, I have to get this done. And I just started fast traveling to points instead of just traveling back to them. I was like, I need to get through this. And I still didn't finish it until after the night of the interview is when I finished it. So after speaking with Rob, I came back and knuckled down and finished it off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, in a game where fast travel is literally like a second, it's way more fun to get on the horse and just go for it.
I used it a little bit like just to jump back to the inn or back to the homestead and like upgrade stuff, and then I jump back to where I was.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than like being at the very northern tip of the map dealing with the Kitsune stuff and being like, I need to go home to upgrade my weapon, and it's going to take me like 20 minutes to get there, or I can just like...
And yeah, because I understand that. Because I like kind of cleared the map as I went.
You've already done the journey once, so you've already...
I might meet something I haven't found, but like most of my map is pretty grayed out. I'm pretty safe. There is like little pockets of white left on my map, but I'm like, I bet you there's something there. So, but yeah. Anyway, chapter 5. Visuals and atmosphere, a living work of art. Let's be real. Ghost of Yotai is stunning. The world is so cinematic and alive that I often stop just to take screenshots. And I took a lot of screenshots. From the misty mountain peaks to the forest alive with falling leaves, every inch of this world feels handcrafted. I found myself exploring simply because I wanted to. I spot a waterfall, you bet I'm swimming behind to check for a cave, even though I've only ever found one. Every cliff I come to, I find myself looking for places to climb, needing to know what is just over the next ridge. The lighting design, the ever-changing sky, the wind, the colour, it's all just breathtaking. I thought Death Stranding 2 looked amazing, but Yotai feels vibrant, full of life, and deeply emotional in every frame.
I don't have a point of reference for that last one because I haven't played Death Stranding at all.
Yeah, look, they are both... For me, it's apples and oranges, where Death Stranding is essentially this post-apocalyptic wasteland versus...
Yeah, it's meant to feel
like that. Why is it? Sorry, there's someone at my door at 8 o'clock at night. I will be right back.
Go do what you got to do. I mean, look, while I don't have the point of comparison, absolutely that game is stunning. Every pixel shines. It's the art design more than anything else.
Yeah, but even so, there's like certain areas where you kind of feel like you can see the copy and paste. You know, and the bushes start looking the same and stuff in Death Stranding. Whereas in this, every environment is just so vastly different. But it is chalk and cheese, and they're completely different environments for different reasons. I think Death Stranding was the first I'd kind of seen of this, like, modern adventure game that had that kind of visual, wow, this looks really cool. So it's like my only comparison because I don't know any other games.
That's all right. You'll have to go back and play Tsushima now after this.
I know.
Go backwards.
I know. Yeah, you know what you should do? Go back and play Tsushima. Play the multiplayer and then come and do the raid with me and Padge. We need a force.
Yeah, but I'd play on casual mode, guys. I will.
Try it. I can carry all of you. Don't stress.
Carry all of us anyway.
It did stress.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So this is just my final thoughts. For someone who has never really got games before, Ghost of Yotai was a revelation. It's not just about combat or quests. It's about connection, discovery, and growth, both for Atsu and the player. I came in hesitant and I left completely enchanted. I wasn't just playing as Atsu. I was learning alongside her. This is a breathtaking emotional journey that balances beauty, brutality, and personal growth, and made me finally a gamer. So if you've ever felt intimidated by games or thought they weren't for you, this might be the one to change your mind. Oh, and Ryan, thank you for letting me take the reins on this one. It's been fun diving into your world a little deeper.
Well, you've done a much better job with it than he ever could. So yes. The fact that there's something in writing, the fact that it's high quality writing, and I'm already now putting together a pitch to woo you over to play it too. That was fantastic. And like really, really cool to get a perspective of someone, as you've kind of alluded to there, that, you know, is kind of stepping into this, and certainly games of this sort of scope and size and pedigree, mm-hmm. I guess, for the first time. It's a really handy little perspective as well.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. And it felt today like I had a school assignment. And I had to like put together what I was going to say and my thoughts. And
you had the teacher here.
But yeah.
Well, hopefully some of your dedication can rub off on Ryan and we can
Yeah. But no, it's been fun. So if another opportunity comes up, I might be interested. But yeah.
Ghost of Tsushima plays very differently to what Yote does. Did it have difficulty like this one?
Yeah, it has difficulty modes. Because my approach was exactly the same. Once I finished the campaign, knocked that bad boy down to easy, or whatever casual, or whatever they called it, and then just cleared the slate.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I know Craig's just started playing it, so I'm sure he'll be filling me in, and that'll get me excited to play it. But yeah, thanks, guys.
No worries. Thanks for coming.
Taken back here.
No, he's just wandered in. He's just starting to.
Maybe you could say for the rest of it. It's pretty easy. It's all written down.
Yeah, but I only like because I've obviously been listening to you guys now for about 3 years, and I think about a handful of episodes in that time. But it has weirdly become part of my weekly routine to just sit there and listen. And I might just be playing games on my phone and doing other things, but.
You have to hear Ryan more than the rest of us. What are you doing?
She's going to leave and go play Yotai.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, guys. Thank you. Hopefully I finish the games shortly and I'll be able to have a more of a spoiler.
Yeah, come back and we'll do full spoilers.
All right. Sounds good. See you guys.
See ya.
All right.
How do we break the news that he's off the show?
How do we kick him out of the call? Quick. So we'll use it because we don't need to hear him when he. What have you been playing, Max?
Since I've been fucking writing reviews.
Oh, there he is. Look, he just walks in. Fucking
turns out I've been doing reviews wrong the entire time. That was fucking awesome.
And podcast hosting as well.
Yeah, apparently it seems. But no, that was actually fantastic. That was really really cool. As I said, like just to have her experience it from a different angle, from a different world. Yeah, and as you said, like it's one of those things. Like when Phoebe and I first got together, it was around Ragnarok had just sort of come out, and remember her coming around and being like, "What's this?" I'm like, "Oh, this is God of War." She's like, "This is a game?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, this is exciting shit." And as she just said, as I entered the space, you know, she's been following along the show the entire time, which is way more effort than she should have had to ever do. And then also enjoying other games along the way, including the old Blueprints incident. But it's really nice to sort of see her come into the space and understand that and experience, not just understand, but experience what it means, like what gaming means to like you, me, people that listen and watch this. You know what I mean? It's like all these other layers on top of it, just this really encapsulating, incredible experience. But yeah, for her first game that she's really tackled, her first review, first podcast, I'm so fucking proud. That was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And thank you to you both for letting her have the floor.
Ryan, you're fired.
Oh, it's fair. It's fair.
I've been on this show for 3 episodes. You're already out. Phoebe's in.
Let me have a look at the chat. What have we missed? Let's see. Everyone's saying hi to Phoebe, which is lovely. Paul, who's actually in the fucking show. Says Ryan is never allowed to critique a game ever again. Phoebe is so much better than him already. Fucking accurate. And you guys just started chatting to each other when Phoebe was here. Let's just see. Yeah, Buck, it would be great if it was Ryan, but it wasn't. It was Phoebe. Yes, but that was absolutely amazing. So big thank you to Phoebe, and of course, big thank you to PlayStation Australia providing the review code that's made it possible for
Ryan to not review,
for me to not play it, and for Phoebe to play it instead. Which makes me laugh now because previously, and I know you do the same, Padge, and Max, you and I, you would do it as well. When we think about like, oh, what games could we review for the betterment of like our children? Like, what would be a fun game that we could play with our children? Now I have to add the added pressure of what's the game that I can play with my partner, that you know, what's she gonna want to play, and then bring her into the fold. But absolutely happy to. And Reverend Park makes the joke that I was going to make, which was you were so jealous that you drove Max's place to take over. I did. In that time, I drove to Max's place. Yes. Just to knock.
Do you want to know what it was?
Knocked on the door.
some random fuck from Facebook Marketplace going, I'm here for my knives. I'm like, what fucking knives are you talking
like,
about?
Like, I sell shit at Marketplace all the time, but it's not fucking knives, guy. Get out of the way.
Check the machete bin.
Don't we have a bin for that?
Yeah. Check the machete bin. Oh, man. As much as I'd hate to transition to something else, but what else have we been playing? What else is on the cards?
I've been playing, like, one thing. Which maybe is? Two. So, earlier this week, I bought Hogwarts Legacy on PC because Warner Brothers was having a massive sale on Steam and it was $10. And I had some money left over in my Steam wallet from selling like Counter-Strike Go skins that I don't use. So it cost me like 35 cents for Hogwarts Legacy. So I played that for a little while, which was nice. It looks immaculate on PC. There's a lot of mods out there for it with like extra game content, which I'm keen to check out, which kind of tipped my hand to.
Did someone mod Quidditch into it?
Oh, God, I hope so.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
But the other thing I've been playing is I picked up Hades 2 on Switch last night and I have struggled to put it down.
Well, that makes complete sense. So you have always been a big advocate for these roguelike sort of games. Particularly Hades, because I remember back in the day, you were like, you got to play fucking Hades. And then eventually you got me with Death Door, and then you got me on Hades. So, like, it makes complete sense. It's actually insane that you've taken so long to pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of other things on my plate that I should be playing.
Yeah, like crunching a review to go interview someone, which is true.
Which is the main reason why I hadn't bought it, because I knew that once I buy it, it's going to be the game that I'm constantly pick up and play. Mm. But in this, you play as Malinowe, and it's set up as the exact same as Hades 1, where you are essentially trying to... In the first one, where you were trying to escape from the underworld, this time we are taking on Kronos, Titan of Time. I'm really bad at this one. I've only finished the first boss. I believe six. So how
can you be bad at this one, though? Is it play different?
It plays
also,
a little bit different.
Have you messed with Hades too?
I played the demo when I got invited to the Nintendo Switch 2 event. But I haven't even played the first. I really wanted to. I loved everything that I saw about it. I loved everything that I got out of Hades 2, but it's sitting there on my PlayStation ready to go.
Beautiful. So, I do want to check the framing before we jump back to Max.
So where Zagreus from Hades 1 was a warrior, Malenoe is a witch. So they play vastly differently. The weapons are different from the first to the second. The character's special attacks are subsequently different as well. I'm trying to relearn all of the... Because when you finish an encounter, you are generally offered two choices of which direction to go. And it is denoted by a symbol, and I, for the life of me, have yet to remember what all the symbols mean. So it could be, go here to get more health, go here to get more mana, go here to speak to this god and get this certain upgrade path, or so on and so forth. So I'm relearning everything, because I haven't played Hades in about 2-ish years, I want to say. So relearning all of the intricacies of that, and then being a roguelike, it's sometimes you just get shit upgrades. Like, sometimes you don't get anything good, and you're like, well, this is doomed to fail. And then you just scrap it, and you run a new one. There are, you know, permanent upgrades that you can get, so you can buy... extra weapons. At the moment, there is 4 in the game. I have unlocked 2 of them. Technically, I've unlocked 1 because you start with 1 unlocked. And then as you progress through the story, you meet more of the gods. They lend you their powers. You can offer them gifts, and then that will drastically change the boons that they offer you, or they'll give you keepsakes for permanent upgrades that you can take and carry with you on your runs that will give you small bonuses and buffs. But it is fantastic. It is fast-paced. They've added a sprint function in this game. So if you hold down dash afterwards, you can keep that increased movement speed until you stop moving.
Is there a penalty for doing that? Like, is there a stamina bar or anything like
no,
that?
No stamina bar, no nothing like that. And because of the fact that you can now sprint, they have also added extra boons that will go off when you sprint. So I had one where I essentially left a trail of fire behind me, and anything that walked into it would take damage over time. So, you know, you've got to kind of pick and choose which boons work with your playstyle. You've got to also realize that not all gods' boons will work well with other gods' boons. So, like, for example, I find that Zeus has a lot of lightning, obviously has lightning-based skills, but they do not pair well with Poseidon skills, because Poseidon skills often have knockback properties, and you want them to stay in place when using Zeus's skills. So you've got to pick and choose kind of where you're going, how you're going to tackle things. But yeah, it's fantastic. I got to, just before we started this, I got to the boss of the second area and got my ass handed to me because it's a 3-person boss fight.
Jesus.
So that was fun. A lot of returning characters from the first game. But yeah, I've played, I think, maybe 2-3 hours so far. So it's very early days.
Nice. Yeah, because
if you are a fan of roguelike games, like, this is one of the more premium offerings. And I mean, it's only available on Switch and PC at the moment. It's $45 here in Australia. You get the Switch 2 upgrade for free if you go that route. It has cross save if you own it on PC as well. You can kind of convert your save. So if you're wanting to play it now and you don't want to wait for it to come to PlayStation, you could buy it now, play it a little bit, and transfer your save at a later date.
Well, yeah, that certainly has my interest. Yeah, because obviously for myself, I'm not going to play it until it comes to PlayStation.
Seconded.
But yeah, if there's the ability to cross, but then again, I then have to pay $45, which I most certainly don't fucking have right now, which is a downside. But yeah, it's interesting. Once again, very aligning.
It's so super giant. Like, you can instantly tell, like, they've got that like aesthetic in all of their games. That,
yeah, they've got a signature style.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's the term I was looking for.
Well, because speaking of aesthetic and style, first question: how humpable do all the gods look? They looked pretty. All of them were hot as hell in the last game.
Dionysus is like
the shit, like the shit,
fucking off the chart with sexual aura.
But like for me, it's the part that I always get lost in when it comes to games like this is all that, you know, this person does this and that and da da da, and like that's where you and your super min max brain really kicks in a gear. But yeah, for myself, not quite that level of autism. Yeah, mine's silent. Okay. The ADHD kind of wins on that one. It's like, think quick. I'm like, this one, explosions. It doesn't always seem to be the case. But what about yourself, Padge? What have you been messing about with this week?
One big embargoed game that I can't talk about.
Well, I can't write that down. Then
you can't write that down. But
are you allowed to say when you're allowed to talk about it?
No.
Later this week?
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I can't even remember what the embargo thing was, but it's out this week, so like stay tuned. But to make sure I had something for this segment, but also it's something that's looking pretty cool and I'm pretty keen to check out. I jumped into Dispatch earlier on tonight.
Ooh, okay.
Just to make sure, yeah, I had something. It's from Ad Hoc, brand new studio, but made up of a whole bunch of ex Telltale alums.
I know this
kind of the, it's kind of this, you know, fallen superhero. Tonally, I'm starting to notice parallels between it and, do you remember the movie Hancock?
Oh yeah, the Will Smith film. Yeah.
Which also I just like one of the very few Blu-rays I actually have in the house. And I found that shit as I walked in here. Like, hang on a minute. It's kind of giving off those vibes so far. Now, I kind of jumped into it tonight to make sure I had something for us. So I haven't even finished the first episode. I'm about halfway through it. And then we got into
that makes more sense. Because earlier on, you messaged saying, I'm only through the first, because I was driving as I read this. I'm like, only through the first episode. I'm like, what the fuck is Mac? What the fuck is Patch talking about? Like, that's.
Yeah, it's.
But
yeah,
that makes more sense. The Telltale connection makes a lot more sense now. Yeah.
But they are rolling these episodes out weekly. There was a few in the first batch. Reviewers had, like four, I think up to about four episodes or something, could only speak about two of them. And then there's episodes rolling out at different rates. I don't actually know what's available publicly at the moment. I suppose it'll have to be the same for everyone now because the game is out publicly. They can't, yeah, especially on the consoles, they can't have the different versions there. So, I would imagine, I'm guessing the first four must be out, and then there's going to roll out episodes 5 through 8 over the next month or so. But I'm really enjoying the tone of it so far. Again, and I guess for anyone who's maybe not been down the path of these...
Sorry to interrupt. Episodes 1 and 2 are currently out now, according to their Steam page.
I've definitely heard of 3 and 4, but maybe it was like at an event or something like that.
That's... And it released, 3 days ago?
Yeah. But yeah, I'm really enjoying the tone of it so far. Again, for anyone who's not familiar with the Telltale thing, it's very much a story that kind of plays out in front of you, and then there's a few quick time events where you'll, you know, lightly interact with the game. You know, press X to punch this person that's coming taking a swing at you, or hold the right trigger and then use the stick to kind of direct your movements. Like it's very light, light stuff, but it allows the story to take center stage. There's lots of dialogue choices and those sorts of things available to you. Again, for anyone who's not been down this path before, it's not, you know, as extensive as what you might get from an Outer Worlds 2 or a Baldur's Gate 3 or those sorts of things.
Genuinely, like, I know we're talking about today. I think both Max and I are genuinely itching to play Outer Worlds 2. It looks fun.
Yeah, if I'd have played the first one.
I played it for like 30 minutes today.
Okay, nice. Yeah, because earlier in the day, we were like, ooh, we're looking at playing this. But, I hope to...
And for... they have released this schedule for the Dispatch episodes. So on the 29th of October, you'll get episodes 3 and 4, and then you get 2 episodes each week until episode 8.
Okay, 2 weeks.
So the whole thing will be out by the 12th of November.
Nice.
Awesome. I'm really enjoying the start of it so far. So I'll definitely get episode 1 and 2 done tonight once I get out of here and get back to it. But then it's back on to Redacted.
Nice.
Back
onto Redacted. In terms of myself, though, not really a whole lot, as once the decision was sort of made to like have Phoebe do the Ghost of Yotai thing, it's just like, okay, cool. She has taken the predominant time on the PlayStation, which Brian's means...
Burden's off me. I can do whatever the fuck I want for a week.
Well, not quite. It was more like, well, what? Like, I want to play games because I like to, and it helps me, you know, with my brain. So what do I do instead? So in those moments, though, were the times
buy another PlayStation.
I don't have fucking money to buy Hades patch.
You're one from JB. Don't worry. We just spoke about you not stealing the merchandise, but you can make
it. Fell off the back of the truck.
Look, we have been in this game for a long time, but we don't have the Padge connection, all right? Where there's like, hey, would you like a Switch 2? Here you go. Would you like a Slim? Here you go. Not saying that we would, you know, ask for that, because that we are fucking nobodies. We ain't Padge. But...
I did not.
Ooh, you know.
Yeah, I asked.
Right now, I'm like, can I have $40 to play Hades? So instead, I've... kind of relegated the PlayStation, and when I have been in there, it's just kind of games I sort of could pick up and play. So a bit more Skate, as they've now started the season 1, which is called Hessian Sesh or something. They've also got a seasonal event with Halloween, so I've gone there and I've done a lot of the missions to get the Halloween chocolate coin tokens things. I'm like, oh, maybe there'll be something worth unlocking. Not really.
I logged in, got my Witch's face mask. I'm like, I'm done.
I was like, and they had like a pair of, what, you know, like Vans slip-ons that were in like skull designs. Well, that's pretty cool. I don't mind that. That's all right. Because they've got the skate pass, which is essentially their battle pass now as well. So I'm sort of collecting all the currency I need for that. Now, thankfully, you don't need to have put, you know, think like Helldivers 2, where, you know, you had to purchase X amount of the items before you could get into the next tier. It does appear that... I can just hold on to my tokens until the later in the run. It's because the more unlocks, the more missions thingies that you do. Because like most of the time, they'll kind of look like things that aren't really of interest to me. But there is some stuff later in the past that's got my attention. I'm like, oh, I'll just work to those. Outside of that, I jump back into the Balatro for no real reason. I did a little bit more in Little Nightmares 3. which I'm still really enjoying, like for a such a cool visual and tonal piece. It does capture near identically the feelings of 1 and 2.
We're going to try and queue up. We have to try and queue up some time to play some multiplayer on that.
That we certainly do, because we were under the expectation that it was local co-op available. It is not. So I was going to play with James, not able to do so. So instead, Max and I will have to organize some time to play.
I'll have to tell my Battlefield 6 story after this, because I actually played Battlefield 6 as well too.
Well, that was going to be my next part now, because I don't remember what I discussed previously, but...
You're about halfway through the campaign.
Yeah, about halfway through the campaign. It started a little bit of oorah, and then it's now started to becoming more intriguing as, you know, things happen like directly in New York that's like, oh shit, that's intriguing. And then now I'm sort of going down down that path. But Max, you've got a Battlefield 6 story. Fill us in.
So, I jumped into multiplayer this week with some friends because they're like, hey, come play. And it was at a reasonable enough hour that I could actually jump on. And... you know, we're playing, and, you know, the most common complaint is, I'm sick of all these fucking medics standing over our dead bodies, not reviving anyone, and playing their role. So, I'm like, I'll do it. I'll play medic. And I went full fucking Private DOS on Hacksaw Ridge. I threw my gun to the ground, pulled out the defibs, and I just ran constantly around this battlefield, reviving everyone, whether they were in my squad or not. I killed a few people with the defibs. Because, like, why not? You just fucking charge him up and zap him in the chest.
What a most disrespectful way to die, though, in Battlefield.
Well, at one point, so I was playing with a full squad. At one point, they're all down. There's, like, 8 people from our team dead in this one room that's just getting lit the fuck up. And I parachute off a roof, jump through the window, defib all 8 of them, jump out a window, run to the next group of dead people, defib all them. The previous lot that I just raised have all died again because there's a tank sitting outside the door. I run back over there, jumping through all the windows, dodging people, stunning people with the defibs on the way through, rezzing everyone else. And by the end of the game, I had like 0 kills, 12 deaths, and like 80-something assists.
Like, you are the John Wick of CPR.
Yeah. It was good fun. I can have fun in a game like that and not having to shoot anybody.
Well, because I think one of the discussions we had previously was you feel that you've surpassed that part in your first person career where you're like, I can't be sweaty anymore. I don't want to have to deal with that.
Although,
I
just don't want to shoot people. But conscientious observer.
Yeah. I think that's kind of one of the things that makes Battlefield uniquely special is that you can't, like, with the class-based approach, not very dissimilar to like Overwatch or these hero-based shooters, where this is like, you know, you could use a sniper rifle in any class, but as a recon, it does, your accuracy is better. So things like that, like a purpose-built roles and classes that force you to work together as a team, I think's awesome. Now, because as someone who cannot get a good kill-death ratio forever, not been able to do so, having the ability to maybe sit back as a scout and pick off who you can, but more kind of just be like that recon, but person over there, you know, calling the spots. And or to have someone like yourself, Max, who's willing to run in and do those health revivals when they're needed. So, yeah, that's dope. And I'm sure your friends are grateful, but now you've created a very strong high baseline that you will likely have to meet every time. So
I'm going
to
be the medic forever now, which is hilarious because, like, whenever I play an MMORPG, I'm always the healer. It's my go-to role.
But it is one of those things, as Mute in the chat does mention, dang, medics do your job. Like, no one wants to be a healer. In every MMO I've ever played, at any raid, there are never any healers. Ever. You're a dime a dozen, Max. We're very grateful.
I was our raid healer. It was good fun. If you don't move out of the AoEs, I just won't heal you. you have an obligation to move, okay? Like, sure, accidents happen, but if you just fucking stand there and take it. There used to be a really cool skill in Final Fantasy Online where you could pull an ally towards you. So there was always one asshole in each group who just wouldn't dodge mechanic, so I would have to do it for him and just wrench him across the screen by using the skill.
Fuck it, just loud noises happening everywhere. I think my
camera. Yeah, was that from you or
that was me.
I heard it. I had a look to see if it was like Hadley getting up on
the bench. Shit out of me. Speaking of scaring the shit out of me, let's get into the section we call Inform the Players, where you tell you what happened this week in PlayStation. And scaring the shit out of us because the times have changed. We had just spoken about Battlefield and moments of war. Gents, we've always discussed that there was one moment, there was one specific time that when that happens, that is when we know the war is over. And that is when Halo...
The princess is no longer in another castle.
The princess is no longer in a castle. She turns out she's in our castle now. Halo is coming to PlayStation.
Partially.
Max, you normally read these things first. Kick in there.
Cool. So Halo Campaign Evolved will be just the start of Halo Studios' plans for bringing the FPS franchise to PlayStation 5 and PlayStation in general. As the developer has said, Halo is, quote, on PlayStation going forward. Wearing a PlayStation t-shirt while saying it, community director Brian Gerard made the comment during the Halo World Championship livestream. In full, he said, "It's a huge deal. It's a long time coming. We're just super excited to be able to welcome even more players now to a franchise we loved, to fall in love with Halo the same way that we all did 25 years ago here at this point. As a community guy, I know that the Halo community is super excited to welcome in their friends as well. It's just going to be more Halo for everyone, and it's really a new era. Halo is on PlayStation going forward, starting with Halo Campaign Evolved." Whether those plans refer to remakes and re-releases of other current Halo titles or completely new ones remains to be seen, but whatever the Halo studio has in the pipeline, it sounds like it's all coming to PlayStation 5 as well as Xbox and PC. It's been almost 4 years since Halo Infinite released, so the series is definitely due for a new entry soon. You'll be able to play that on PlayStation 5, it sounds like. Jared even echoed the sentiment over the PlayStation blog, sharing, quote, "Halo Campaign Evolved is coming in 2026, launching day and date on PlayStation 5. We'll have more to share in the months ahead, but for now you can wishlist it today. As the Master Chief once said, I think we're just getting started." Halo on PlayStation begins with Halo Combat Evolved, in 2026, which remakes the first game's single-player only. It'll have entirely new visuals, extra gameplay features, and a remastered soundtrack and new voice acting. The only thing you don't get is multiplayer. However, there are three new prequel missions for returning players to be excited about, because the one thing people want in their FPS is a lack of multiplayer.
Now, I'm just going to put it out there. Is that literally this, like, Halo Master Chief's most iconic quote?
I don't know. I think we're just getting started,
because if it is, that is the shittest...
No, it'd be the finish this fight one.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just like, this is what the quote he's known for. Like, I'm pretty sure I've heard 1,000 people say that quote in almost anything. But, yeah, this is intriguing. At least for me personally. Now, I've truly never played Halo. Like, I've played Halo 1, 2, and 3.
I have played Halo 1, 2, and 3.
Mm.
I've played quite a bit of Halo over the years.
So I'm very keen for this. Well, let's touch upon it in two ways, right? Let's touch upon it as Halo the game and then what it means as a greater thing in a moment. So for myself, I'm just keen. In the same way that I've never really properly played Gears of War either, just haven't picked up yet, but having it come to PlayStation, I'm like, oh, cool. Also, I did email the guy Pageant. I think it may have been full of shit. But in short, I've never played Halo, never played Gears. So having them come across is great. For me as a PlayStation player.
Yeah.
Because I would love to play it. And it's
PlayStation, man.
Absolutely. I've never... I never had
Paul and I are gamers, and we will play anything wherever it is.
Whoa.
Well, how'd you play Halo, Paul?
Of course I played Halo on the Xbox. I had no other choice. But now that I have a choice, you better believe I'm playing it on PlayStation and nowhere else.
Mm. But it's an interesting decision for it to be the campaign only, which can only lead to speculation of, like, are they remaking campaigns? And then are they dropping some sort of major cross-platform multiplayer experience that everyone can kind of get, and that just kind of brings it all together in a one? Because my understanding is, like, Halo Infinite...
It's what Halo Infinite was.
Yeah, my presumption was Infinite means you'd be paid this forever, but they've backed off support of that as well.
Because it was garbage. I
don't know. So what do you think? Because even in the chat, Mute jumps in and goes, okay, if they're remaking a game a second time, please improve the driving mechanic.
It is weird that they don't just do the Master Chief Collection, which they recently remastered. You would think that that would be their play, is to be like, hey, here's fucking Halo.
But isn't it pretty busted? Or it was?
I don't think
Master
so.
Chief Collection was very, very much busted, but they fixed it.
Okay.
I played it on PC at launch. I didn't have any issues.
I just think they're concerned about it being fairly dated, regardless. So I think when they bring multiplayer to PlayStation, they just want to put their best foot forward. And so whether that's you'll get multiplayer for the first time when you get our next big Halo game, or whether they do some dedicated multiplayer title that launches for all of them. Yeah, I'm okay with the path they're going down. The one that gives me a real chuckle is the comment that says, I know that the Halo community is super excited to welcome their friends in as well. I haven't seen many Xbox fans overly happy with this.
No one's really stoked about it as it appears to be.
PlayStation fans are.
Yeah, I'm stoked. I'm keen as hell.
Anyone neutral is. But if you're an Xbox, they're cracking tanties at the moment. It's pretty entertaining.
Well, let's jump into that. So, Padge, as probably the larger sort of games industry insider out of the three of us, you analyze it differently than the three of us.
That's the way I thought he was going with that.
No, I was just saying, because you have a way of being more articulate about the industry at large than, say, Max and myself, particularly Max. He doesn't give a fuck.
Sometimes, but also I'll just, you know, tell someone to fuck off, and that's my articulate thought.
That's a good, after strong analysis, I'm sure. So with where you're sitting and how you're looking at this, your bias aside, what do you think the larger ramifications of this decision is?
I mean, I think we've all seen this coming. I mean, even ignoring the leaks and reports that this was coming for quite some time, once their initial four titles that were Sea of Thieves and Pentiment and Grounded and whatever that other game was, Hi-Fi Rush, once those first four came out and then we saw another title come along, you're like, okay, cool. We know where this is going to end. And the road to Xbox becoming a third party who also might happen to have a console was clearly on.
Almost like they need to make $83 billion.
Yeah.
Once the data came out about Call of Duty and it not really tipping the needle in the favor of Xbox when it came to Game Pass.
I think you said they lost like $300 million or something.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Because all of those people would have bought it at full price.
They would have bought it on Xbox instead.
They fucking didn't.
And so I'm not at all surprised by this whole thing. I mean, honestly, we knew it was kind of locked in once Forza was announced, then Gears, and you're like, okay, when's Halo? You know it's coming. So this is all, I think, been known for quite some time now. I don't know. They're obviously, all the reporting is that they're going to put out another platform, but it's going to be really PC, Xbox hybrid. So they don't, I guess, commit too heavily.
I sent a long-winded message to Ryan about this yesterday, I think, on my drive to Melbourne. And I have a feeling, and like this next story leads into it, I have a feeling that the next Xbox console is a Steam box. They'll re-partner with ROG Ally again, most likely, or with ROG again, most likely, and you will be sold what is essentially a Steam box. So their controllers automatically sync to it, but you are buying a PC.
And so, obviously, it's going to be a good segue over to that story. But, I mean, for me, then, the only thing that we're kind of left with at this point is, because, yes, Halo is going to be day and date. Gears Reloaded was. The Outer Worlds is. But
I've got to hope Fable is next year when that drops.
But, yeah, so when does, you know, something like Fable, which is a new game, it's not a remake, it's not a remaster, it's a new entry. Same with, not that people are wild about it, but South of Midnight and Avowed and some of that, like, when are those games going to be day and date? When those start to drop, that's when I that's the next logical thing at this point is, okay, when do they abandon the early access essentially for Xbox players?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that will be sooner rather than later.
I think it will be. I think it's coming a bit faster. Once Gears did pretty well on PlayStation. Forza's done incredible numbers on PlayStation.
It's done more numbers than Astrobot.
Yeah.
And then
Halo's going to be huge.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So like from where I sit and looking at all this, my initial thing, my first immediate thought was last year when we did that panel, which was, the console wars, the panel, that couldn't have happened any other moment. Like that was the last possible second that really could have been done.
You ended the war.
Now in hindsight, it does feel like a little bit of a middle finger on the way out. Because the answer was definitively PlayStation and...
Will Nintendo ever play ball with anyone else? Will we ever see Mario on a different system?
No, because I think that's a big thing as well. Like, there seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding of how exclusives work and why they do them. Most people assume it's money. It's not about that. It's about property and owning the IP and giving your brand or your platform a sense of identity and reason to go there. Because if it was all about money, everything would be everywhere all at once. But that isn't the case. So for myself, when I look at this circumstance, my immediate question is, what does this mean for the future of the console space at large, right? We've discussed in the past about how PlayStation ran best when they had competition, but really, in truth, and this is something that was really brought to my attention recently, is PlayStation hasn't had competition for a very long time, really. Like there are moments where they have been kept at bay, not at bay, like someone nipping at their toes, but predominantly that has been through mergers and acquisitions, not any actual growth or games, or anything that's self-contained that identifies them as this is where Xbox is doing what they're good at. Now, Xbox, of what they are good at is not creating anything and buying things to make the illusion that they're creating things. And we're seeing that again. So right now, I look at this and granted, I will not stop playing PlayStation. And until they stop making PlayStations, I will continue to play them. But without a direct competitor, without a quote unquote direct competitor in Xbox with a competing console, I wonder what the balance of the industry is going to be. The idea of a Steam box is probably a smart bet, seeing as that's what, that was what was done previously. And I don't think that was the right time. These days, I think people have a lot more of an understanding of plug and play PCs and whatnot.
Before you dive into this hard, do you want to just read the next story? Because that is what this is about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the next news is PS6 price rumors. So early this week, in an interview with Mashable about the new ROG Xbox Ally X, which is so full of just Windows bullshit. What?
Apparently it can't reach 60 frames unless it's plugged in.
Yeah.
Kind of defeats the purpose of a handheld, in my opinion, but whatever.
It also affects the point of the device. You're like, is this an Xbox? Like, no, it's not. It's a PC with an Xbox skin badly. So try it again. With the new ROG Xbox Ally X handheld, Xbox boss Sarah Bond talked a little more about the organization's upcoming hardware plans. She said, quote, "The next-gen console will be a very premium and high-end created experience." That read like a Donald Trump quote. "The next-gen console will be very, very premium and a high-end created experience." You're starting to see some things of the. So you started to see some of the thinking we have in this handheld.
We don't want to give it away.
You don't like it? We've got a console for you. It's Xbox 360.
We're always going to work in consoles until next week when I say we're not, because I've changed my mind. But either way, now writing on Twitter, hardware Snoop. Kepler L2 has weighed in with his price predictions for the PS6 compared to the next Xbox. $600 versus $1,200 is my guess, he said. It's worth noting this is purely his own speculation, but he goes on to explain his thinking. He adds, quote, 42% more silicon, 20% more memory, higher board and cooling costs. Plus, they can't subsidize the hardware with third-party store support, end quote. Indeed, it's rumored that the next Xbox will effectively be a Windows PC and therefore will include access to competing storefronts such as Steam, GOG, Good old games. Thank you. I wonder where Galaxy came from. An Epic Game Store. Consoles historically. Oh, thank you.
Gold Galaxy is the platform there.
Consoles historically have built their businesses around the concept of a walled garden. Sony, for example, has always sold a system as commonly has sold systems at a loss or break even in order to grow its install base and make money through the sales of software, where it will take a 30% cut of each game sold. With the next Xbox effectively opening up to any PC-based storefront, it'll cease to have the advantage of a walled garden, and thus, that's expected to increase the price of its console. The PS6 is looking like another mass-market device, just like its predecessors, while it appears that next Xbox is going to be a lot more niche and aimed at a very specific demographic. So, jumping into that, one of the things I learned this week was around the Xbox Ally X. So, originally, I believe it was AMD and as well as ROG had come to them with the idea of, hey, we can make you a custom AOC, so everything, you know, all on one chip, if you can do 10 million units. And even Microsoft went, no, we can't do 10 million units because Steam Deck has barely done 5 from what I heard and what was discussed, right? So this is going to be the same problem that Microsoft will have heading into this new market. There's no reason for companies like AMD to create these custom-built chips for them, because that's the beauty of a console, is they create these custom setups that will work with whatever you put in them. That's the challenge with PCs, and as much as I've learned over time and I've got a better understanding of PCs than I ever have before, I know that it's not as difficult as it once was to, you know, understand hardware dynamics and the drivers and all those other bullshit jokes we used to make.
Which is why I think it's going to be essentially a Steam box. It's going to be a PC.
But saying that, though, like the idea of grabbing a Steam Deck or a ROG Ally and knowing that I have to go in and tweak the fucking settings to make it run properly, I don't see...
Get to tears.
Yeah, I don't see the average consumer being willing to do so.
But they... I don't think you need to do that with a Steam box. As a handheld, they are their own beast.
Hmm.
With their own challenges. From memory, most Steam boxes are essentially just mid-range PCs, and you just go.
If they're mid-range PCs, then you're getting subpar performances from those games, right?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, most mid-range PCs will run most things on high at 1080p, which is what you're going to get from most games these days anyway.
On a console.
You know, most of the time we'll get, oh, you can up-res it at a variable refresh rate and, you know, you might hit 120. Mm. But very rarely do we get 4K 120. Most of the time we're lucky to get 4K 60. Pretty so, good. Like, mid-range stuff is what we're getting now anyway.
Now, from memory, I think some of the Steam boxes were a little bit upgradable in some way. Yeah.
You could pay more for more.
Yeah. So, look, like that's certainly it's a very valid possibility. But in that same thought, PlayStation are going to have a challenge as well. So, with the cost of everything going utterly insane, it's going to be very difficult for them to have a reasonable entry price. Because, like, yes, they may have the numbers of the support from these hardware manufacturers to allow these custom built things, and therefore, able to buy it bulk. Cheaper wholesale setups, but the prices of the PS5 now and the PS5 Pro is pretty insane. It's going to be very difficult for them to then release the new console, the PS6, whenever it is, at a relatively cheaper price, allowing for inflation. It's going to be very difficult. But what about you, Padge? Where do you see like the dollar value of these next consoles going?
Oh, bloated if I know, but keep in mind that'll be $600 US.
Yeah,
too.
Of course.
So you know, that's instantly pushing it closer to $900 to $1,000.
Yeah.
In our dollars, in Aussie dollary dues. I don't know the price as much as we read it,
or even the possible crazy, Steam Box side of things. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Steam Box side of it on the Xbox thing, it doesn't faze me too much either. They are, as we got in the write-up there, they're niching down. And whatever suits them best, they just want more ways to get their games in front of people at this point. That's their approach.
But not an Xbox. We want people to play their games however they want, but it's not an Xbox because...
And they seem to be forfeiting the...
No. This is an Xbox. That's their whole slogan now. This is an Xbox.
With an asterisk. It's not actually an Xbox.
It's an Xbox.
Your Samsung TV is an Xbox.
Ooh.
So for me, that's like they're forfeiting their 30%, like a 30% cut, and that's but in hoping that they'll make that back by reaching more people in more places. Which is
but they're not if you buy it through the Microsoft Store.
No, you. Oh yeah, sorry, but how many people are going to do that?
Yeah, no, like given the option, like we're most platform people, like
especially
Steam.
Once you embrace PC, yeah, once Steam, like if you're like and so much of my life is here on Steam.
I guess it depends on how well they like how well they integrate it and how. Much of a pain in the ass they make it to like access your Steam library through their system because they can still wall it off essentially.
But then why? Once again, if the entire process is them to make a small, more readily usable PC,
are we seriously questioning like the thoughts of what the fuck Microsoft are doing lately? Like,
oh yes, actually that's a very good point. every question should be answered with why, and then we speculate as to fucking why because most of the questions have answered why.
I'll hone in on the point
because that you like because like if it's going to cost them $90 to put it on if it's going to cost someone $90 to buy it on the Microsoft Store or $90 to buy it on the Steam Store, but I can one click purchase it on Microsoft Store as opposed to having to log in, do all these extra steps. Some people just be like, "Fuck it, it's easier," and just
stay on Steam.
I just click the $90 and just fucking download it.
Uninstall the Xbox app from the Xbox.
Like I have friends that will pay more money for something just so they don't have to have an extra login to something else.
It's like, but I would say for 99% of these people on PC, their default is Steam, and it'll go elsewhere. So I actually think it's going to work out favorably for them in that sense.
So you want to expand on a point, Patch?
Yeah, just going back to your point before about PlayStation and kind of their approach if there's essentially a competitor down. I think you and I discussed this when you came on Patched with me a couple months back, and I argued pretty strongly that where we could make the argument about complacent PlayStation from PS2 into PS3, I just don't see that anymore. Like that was a day and age where the console exclusive, be it Halo or what Uncharted or whatever it happened to be, that would be the way you'd sell people on your platform. It's not really the case anymore. Like PlayStation's just got this inertia, it just goes about its business. Nintendo's much the same. And then you may not be buying it for your God of Wars or your Uncharted's or your Halo's or your Mario. Well, actually, sorry, Nintendo's a bit different. You definitely buy Nintendo for Mario. But it's more about just going where your friends are and keeping things going there. And so I think like
where your library is discussing the Microsoft Steam stuff.
So then in terms of any potential complacency, well, it's only a hardware-based thing anyway, where they are still going to be kind of forced to keep up because they want to make sure that there's nothing that's exclusive to Xbox, PC, or just PC full stop. They won't want to miss the boat on any of these sorts of things. And so then really it's just down to software. And I don't see that, like, because of the way the environment's changed, where it was, competing on exclusives back in the day and trying to make the most appealing box, now you're just competing for time, whether it is Fortnite, whether it is people's access to Netflix, whether it is, whatever it happens to be, you're not really competing in the same way anymore. So they, like, you in the sense of you are always competing, but it's a very different.
I was reading an article earlier, and I probably should have put it in the news, but I didn't. But I think it was an interview with Shu, and he mentioned that this the people in charge of PlayStation currently are the youngest that they have ever been. I think is Naoki's the name of the new CEO? Is it Naoki?
Yep.
Yeah, he's in his mid-40s.
Very rare for CEOs to be in their 40s. Normally they're old as fuck.
Yeah, and that's what he was saying. He's like, this is the youngest set of like executives we've ever had at PlayStation. Usually, it has always been the old guard.
Nishino
and obviously Herman Hulse is now
Future Club.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how a younger leadership will steer the ship as opposed to what has generally been a much older generation. In short, helming the wheel.
And it's one of those weird challenges as well. Like, yeah, that's totally true. However, Would you then, although you can praise them for those choices?
I'm not necessarily praising them.
It doesn't appear that some of the decisions that have been made recently come from someone with limited experience. On the presumption that age equals experience, which it commonly is, but also commonly is not too. So, an interesting middle ground. I like it. I like your thinking, Max. I like it.
Thank you for arguing the for and against, Ryan.
Yeah, because as I said it, I'm like, Ryan, that's not always true. That's fucking very true. There are people that are like, just because they've been around long enough, they don't know fucking shit. But it's an interesting time. Interesting as we head into the future. But that is all the major big bits of news we have this week. It's been pretty quiet. Pat, do you want to jump in the quick bitties for us?
Todd Howard confirms Bethesda are working on new Fallout games. In other news,
on,
blue.
Yeah, and on the back of Fallout 4 Anniversary Edition.
And being able to buy New Vegas on PC, but this time you can get a statue with it.
So before we jump into that, obviously more Fallout. Look, they're announcing this is about as early as they did fucking Elder Scrolls 6, right? 19 years before anything will actually happen.
Yep.
But in more recent...
But hang on.
Go ahead.
We're about to hit a fucking Game Awards season. Yeah. So we're going to get another Keighley show. And we're going to see Fallout... What are we up to? Five? We're going to see Fallout 5 in some clouds.
Yeah, they're going to pan over this like apocalyptic vista, and then just in the they'll drop a bomb, and in the mushroom cloud out will come Fallout 5. And then they'll be asked every question under the sun in every interview for the next 6 years and still have nothing to show for it. But Fallout 4 Anniversary Edition, do you think that this is those rumors of the Fallout remaster that we've been hearing, or remake? What was expected to be Fallout 3 or hopefully New Vegas. Instead, it's just Fallout 3 still coming. 4. Still coming?
Yeah.
And are either of you going to play this Fallout 4 Anniversary Edition? Mind you, those playing at home, all it's doing is coming to PS5. It gets all the DLC, which the Game of the Year edition had, so that's not very remarkable, and some mod creation credits. I don't hate Fallout 4. It runs kind of bum. So I'd be okay if it runs better on PS5, like, sure. It depends if they're doing, like, you know, the weird Oblivion remastering of it, I suppose.
Built-in mod support for console.
Max,
it'll have its own mod menu and all that crap for console. It'll be fine.
You play it?
Nah, Fallout's never been my jam.
The new EA partnership will reimagine how games are made with AI. What a shitty statement that is.
Well, yeah. New EA partnership with who? The Saudi Arabian, you know, prince that bought them? Like,
yeah, because it's going to reimagine how they're made. It's going to be made with significantly fewer people. all the
with less talent, with less
hair
money.
Are going to be fired. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a shitty time to be at EA.
The Saudis and Kushner, like, they are part of Trump's domain now.
Yeah, I'm not. Look, I got told not to do that Trump voice ever again, which is fair. It was pretty fucking bad, so I won't do it again. But it is like EA. You know, how many years did they win like worst company in the world or whatever multiple times?
How many years?
Yeah, and then and again, it's like
they are the best of the worst. They're the best of being the worst.
So they were the worst, but now they're the best. They wouldn't have bought them if they weren't the best.
Well, not to do it.
Yeah, I get so mad at the idea of more generative AI in games. Because I imagine that's what they mean. AI have been in games forever, but we're talking generative, I assume.
Until it gets good. But even then, it's
bad. But then again, until I was like, I hate generative AI. And then I watch all these Pokemon National Geographic videos this week. I'm like,
oh my God,
this
fucking
rule. How many fucking Disney Pixar?
Oh, and you've sent me like trailers for the most offensive and abhorrent Disney Pixar films.
Like original 50s Disney films.
Yeah, it's like here, you know, coming out of Disney Pixar, two girls, one cup. And it's like these Disney characters like sharing, you know, it's. There's been some things. There was like an Epstein Island one, which was actually quite funny. there was, Gaunt, was that Gaunt to get milk? And it was a story about an African-American father and his adventure to go get milk. He's actually going to get it. Eventually he'll come home, he promised. It was the Sora AI is going to be a, it's dangerous, but it's also been very fun.
And our last quick bitty is that the PS5 has surpassed lifetime sales of the PS3 in the US, specifically the US.
Hot damn.
Yeah. Global numbers won't be far off.
None.
Yeah. Well, once again, PS3 didn't sell that well initially, comparative like PS4, PS2. Awesome. Success of the PS5. All right, let's get into the games that are coming out this week. They are as follows. On the 28th of October, you get Aces of Thunder coming to PSVR 2, Beneath PS5, Hyper Dimension Neptunia Rebirth 1 Plus, Hyper Dimension Neptunia Rebirth 2 Sisters, Hyper Dimension Neptunia Rebirth 3 V Generation, all coming to PS4. Silly Polly Beast, coming to PS5, PS4. Simon the Sorcerer Origins, a very subpar Harry Potter ripoff, coming to PS5, PS4. Recreation, but with a W, PS4. 29th of October, The Outer Worlds 2, PS5. 30th of October, Age of Empires 4 Anniversary Edition, PS5. Ark Raiders on your PS5. Asterix and Obelix, Mission of Babylon, PS5. Dragon Quest 1 and at, because Max held the shift too long. And 1 and 2, HD-2D Remake, PS5. Greek Tragedy, a game that I should be excited by, but I assume it's shit, is Harvest Moon, because Max also spelt it wrong. Harvest Moon, Home Sweet Home, Special Edition. Every time they release a new Harvest Moon game, it's always a special edition, and the games always suck. It's been shit for so long.
Yeah, it's because it's the special edition, so they don't care.
Kamala, PS5, Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection with a K, PS5, PS4, Virtua Fighter 5 Revo, PS5, and on the 31st of October, Flying Aces Legend of the Red Baron, PS5, Paw Patrol Rescue Wheels Championship, both PS5 and PS4, Tales of Zillia Remastered, PS5, and finally, Truck Driver The Dutch Connection, PS5. That sounds like a porno, I'm not going to lie.
It does.
Truck Driver, The Dutch Connection. There's people banging each other in that game.
I'm dirty trucking.
it's you and you a series of
lot
wizards.
Can't rule it out in any game right now.
It's just fucking straight trucking.
There was dick in Dispatch in the first 10 minutes of the game.
I'm more intrigued in this Dispatch game.
There's like green super-powered dick.
Exactly what I look for wine in Schlong.
Give it to me green, super powered. Give it to me green.
And if it's neither of those things, nothing to do with it.
There is also the caveat that Outer Worlds 2 is already out if you want to buy the big boy edition.
Yeah, it's $190 if you want to get it 5 days early access or whatever. Yeah, that's the face mat. That's face patch. That is the fucking face. $190 he does. It's disgusting.
My asshole clenched significantly when I heard that.
Oh, man. Like, it's bad enough, like, the, you know.
Cheeks.
Like I said,
I'm going to go buy a PlayStation controller this week.
Yeah, me too. well, I bought them before things got more dire and I was, like, out of work a bit longer than I expected. But that does bring us to the end of the show. Big thank you to everyone for joining us, for watching along. And, of course, big shout out to my partner, Phoebe, for coming in and delivering a well more. As I prove in the exact same sentence, a well more genuinely articulate review than I could ever deliver, including that sentence just then. I am so fucking proud of her for not just doing it herself, giving it a go, but then choosing to come engage in this with me. So I'm very without me. It's one of those things where, like, I'm very, very lucky in that Phoebe is so keen to understand all the weird things that make me. Because I am objectively a weird fucking person. I have very specific weird. Thank you for the nod, Padge. I appreciate it. for the audio listeners, Padge is like, yes, he's fucking weird. And I have my very particular hyper interests. So to have her be willing and keen to then try to understand how my brain works and why I love the things I do, but then in turn also realize that it's fucking awesome and wanting to explore it more is great. And I couldn't be happier. Are you guys talking to each other?
Yeah, Padge said about 10 minutes ago that he's got to like wrap things up and you keep waffling.
Well, because I don't look at my phone when we're doing the fucking show because I'm here in the show. I'm supposed to be talking to you two. I shouldn't be looking at my phone talking to other fucking people. Anyway, because we're apparently rushed for fucking time now. Hey, Max, you want to get us out of here?
All right, everybody, you know the drill. This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X, and TikTok now. Check out all the links. They are in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head to twitch.tv/popculture. We want you to record this show live. We can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube. Be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist. And of course, if you do want to hear what Padge has to say in more depth, be sure to go check out player2.net.au. I just realized we should add that to the spiel while you're here because they're a great source.
Sorry about it.
It's a great opportunity. As I said, allowed me to become a Metacritic review writer twice. Big win. Big much appreciated. But either way.
Not making it 3 times. Sorry about it.
No, not until next MLB comes out.
Yeah.
But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And I'm Paul James.
All right, so the fuck out of here, I guess.
He was trying to be professional and not interrupt the flow of the fucking show.
Nah, I made it worse.
I'm going to die.
I'm in danger.